Yeah, they're still making those?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think the 7140s were the last model that they made.
Yeah.
All right. We're ready to start the show?
Yeah.
Yeah! So we can hear what Rich has to say. Boo! Mini PC show.
Yeah, whatever.
That's what Alan says.
Bunch of whatever. Ladies. You're all haters.
All right,
so you provide a lot to hate.
I'm beautiful.
Ooh, I love it. I love it. Here we go, Joel. Give me a count around, reach around. For Alan.
A pass, but 2-3-1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
Big O! Showtime!
Pizza, pizza.
Hey guys, it's Flying Rich here, and I just like to get a little on my tongue.
Are you a naked ape from the animal kitchen? Sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a link at bat. But the show is go direct to DLNTS.org. And IC challenge the LinuxTech.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 838 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
We had Pat.
We had him there.
We had Pat.
I saw it go red, but I didn't hear anything. We have Alan.
Hello, hello.
We have Pat. He's still silent. I see it go red, man. It seems like he's still muted.
He sees the lips flutter.
We have Joel.
Good evening.
With Flying Rich.
From the Hughes Outpost Orlando Command. Where did you get that audio?
What about your audio? Sounds fine to me.
No. Where did you get that clip? It's like a little on the tip of my tongue. I'm trying to figure out where you got that from.
I got it from the show, man. I don't remember. That was a while ago.
What were we talking about?
I don't remember. It was like a couple of months ago. and you said that, and I clipped it out like right away.
So you got to put that with Joel's, like, what did Joel say last week? It's a little short, but my wife's okay with it or something.
Oh, well, he just cut that one out, too.
Yeah, you're going to get more than I have.
And also on the show, we have Joe.
Hello.
Get Joe. Rich,
it's Star Wars week.
Yes, Rich, you said you had something you wanted to say before you leave.
Yeah. I'll be boomeranging on you guys. I'll be like that bad check. I'll be coming back. So the DB Power 4K cam. I mean, it may record in 4K, and so the next question is, how good is the chip sensor, and how good is the lens or the focus and all that bit? Well, it's about 1K worth of good. So the question is, the burning question is it a GoPro, you know, top of the line GoPro replacement?
No.
Hell no. Is it worth $20? Yeah, I'd say it's worth $20. And I'll post this. I'm going to be posting a review. I may post the time lapse I did today, which was kind of cool, sunsetting over the water and all that. It has decent enough functions. Actually, for $20, you get an underwater case, you get like all sorts of the GoPro type accessory mount stuff. You get a second battery. The battery life is not so good. The batteries might be new old stock or something like that. They last about an hour. So I wouldn't count on recording for over an hour.
That's interesting, because it made the reviews that complained made it sound like you pop the battery in, start shooting a video, and 30 seconds later you got to replace it.
Yeah, the batteries. Now, I'm not going to say. So the time lapse I did was maybe over an hour. It might have been like 90 minutes or more. I'll have to check. And I'll have all of that information in the review I do on my channel. I wanted to post it tonight. I might not get to it tonight or either late tonight to post the time lapse I did in the sunset. It was really pretty. It was very nice. So what this thing does, like I said, is it a GoPro replacement? No. Is it better? Is the camera better than my Note 8? No. And it might not even be better than my Note 4. But time-lapse is pretty cool. The audio recording, so if you want to use that as a vlogging camera, it's not good as a vlogging camera. It'll be good as like a B-roll camera. But it will also do an instant on and work as a dash cam. You can do loop recording and have it power up and work as a dash cam. So with the wide field of view, I think that would be an excellent application. You got to get, it's got a 1/4-20 mount, so you got to get a suction cup with a 1/4-20 mount to put it on your windshield. And, you know, it's got a micro B jack, so you just got to have the micro B jack, and boom, if you put it in a switched outlet, it'll come on when the it'll power on when the car turns on, and you got yourself a dash cam, which I've been wanting to run a dash cam, just because I figure, you know, you see the Russian dash cam footage, and
tons of them.
Yeah, occasionally something happens, and you figure that might be cool to throw on YouTube, you know, just to have some content. So yeah, it's a good B-roll camera. I might actually get a second. If you buy this for $20, it's worth $20. It's not worth $25. It's not worth $30. If you buy it for $20, you'll feel good about the purchase. It does still photos also. The internal clock doesn't seem to hold a charge, so if there's an internal battery that powers the real-time clock, it's dead, or it doesn't hold a charge for more than a few minutes. So there's a couple of flaws with the thing, but again, if you're buying it and expecting a $20 camera and you're happy with all of the functionality, like I said, it will record in 4K, you're probably wasting your time. You're probably better off just recording in 1K because
the 1080p,
yeah, 1080p. Because what you get out of the 4K that you don't get in the 1080p is not worth talking about. I haven't done I'll have to do a 4K to 1K comparison, but yeah, like I said, my Note 8, which is what, 2 years old now, has a better camera than this. And I don't know what resolution the Note 8 videotapes at it. I mean, it's like 1080p. It might be slightly above that, but the, you know, color saturation, those kinds of things, you can definitely see. I'll be posting a video with side-by-side comparison on all that stuff. And I'll stop talking and let you guys ask any questions if you got any.
No, you covered it pretty well. I mean, my only question would have been, you know, was it worth $20? And it sounds like it's worth every nickel of it.
Would you get another one or a couple more just to have them? You know, you could use them for things that you don't need to worry about them getting too damaged or broken.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, actually I did a couple of things. I seriously would consider getting a second one and maybe a third one. Now that's because I do YouTube, and if I have a disposable camera, who the heck cares? I have a magnetic mount. I threw it on the outside of the car and drove around with it. You know, so you can do stuff like that. If you say you're doing a car review, and you know you want to get that classic driving down the road footage with the GoPro stuck to the side of the car, you can do that. And who cares? I mean, you probably care more about the SD card. You know, the micro SD card.
Yeah, it's crazy. The micro SD card might cost more than a camera.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, man. There's been some really good deals on micro SD cards lately.
Yeah.
You can get 128 gig for like $16 at Micro Center most of the time.
No, that's right. Like $4 but I would get the less than the cameras.
So yeah, but the Micro Center brand's shit. Yeah, the Micro Center brand's crap. And you know, the only reason I would ever buy one of those is if it was just for like stills.
Yeah.
For video. You need something faster.
And don't get me wrong, you know, there's a lot of problems with what I do with micro SD cards that they're not designed for. And when you're using them in, you know, like Raspberry Pi and you have a RAM disk on your Raspberry Pi, that is the quickest way to destroy a micro SD card. You know, you got to turn off the RAM disk.
Yeah, that's why I'm glad, I know...
I just got an alert. Nancy Pelosi voted to impeach the president.
We don't talk about that stuff here, man.
Yeah, whatever. It's historic.
Yeah.
I'm taking it records right to MP4, right?
Yeah, it records to MP4. The battery door is also the door for the micro SD card. If you do plug it into a computer, it'll mount as a drive, so you can copy the files off that way. The getting in and out the micro SD card is like, you know, jeweler precision almost. Because it is not obvious where it goes, and it's not real easy to get out, and you would have to unmount it even if you have it on a super small tripod to get the SD card in and out, or change the battery for that matter.
Is it spring loaded? Like, come out
it'll
easy?
Spring eject.
Oh, okay. It's just finding the place it goes into?
Yeah, because it goes in parallel to the battery, next to the battery. If you didn't really know where it would go, you'd never figure it out.
Roll it in flour and look for the wet spot.
You know what? If it were only that easy.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
that's like, you know, micro SD is great, like for like really small devices. The one thing I ain't figured out is my CR10 Mini uses micro SD for its for putting the G code on.
Yeah,
I'd much rather have
computer, you know. That's
well, yeah, but I like the design of the CR10 V2 better because it uses a full size SD card, which makes a lot more sense. But
I kind of think the full size SD card has got its days numbered.
Pretty much.
Oh, most likely, but.
Yeah, a lot of things. I mean, even so, I run around. So my full size SD card has now, thank you for all of the Black Friday sales, a 512 gig micro SD card into. So my SD card slot has in my Mac has a flush mount adapter that I can put a micro SD in, and it's now rocking double the space. It used to be 256, now it's 512, and so soon I'm gonna nuke and pave my Mac. And I'll have all sorts of crazy space available.
Now, there is another memory card format, which is a lot larger than either micro or full-size SD, and that's...
Compact Flash.
No. I'm not even talking about that one. No, Sony has one called XQD, which is used on their video cameras, primarily. And I don't know if it's just Sony. I don't think it's just Sony. Doing a search, and they do have USB adapters, so they are relatively easy to adapt to your card. Now, I know it's not just Sony who makes them, but I'm trying to see. Nikon has them with it, and it's the higher end cameras probably using a XQD, which I believe are a little bit faster access than the standard typical micro SD or SD card. So.
I haven't tried the underwater housing. It looks decent enough. You know, being that I have a pool and would only have to walk out my back door, you know, some of those things are kind of rough.
Put the cover together first without the camera in it. And so you get to see whether or not it actually is watertight.
Put
paper towel in there.
Right. I was just going to say that. Any underwater housing, definitely throw a paper towel in there. And I knew a guy did serious underwater photography. You throw a tampon in with your $15,000 camera, this way, if there's water in there, it gets, you know, contained in one spot. You know, if you blow a seal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which, I know.
There's a joke about that.
For the GoPros, they actually have water absorbers that you can put in the case, but I have taken my GoPro 4, Hero 4 Black, into the water, specifically ocean water, and it was just fine. So, I mean, you know, granted, I'm
talking about GoPro. That doesn't have a case on it to begin with.
Right. Well, I'll say the new ones don't need cases because the new ones are waterproof to begin with.
Yeah.
The one I have is not. It was the one after that one, but it came with a waterproof case too. So it ain't no big deal.
I'll tell you what would suck with this. I got to figure out what the battery life is, because if you're going on a dive and if you're going to be down for longer than the battery life,
it ain't gonna be long. Yeah, my GoPro doesn't even go, I think, probably 30 minutes, maybe, max.
Oh, yeah, because I have no GoPro experience, so I have no clue.
Well, what's the battery life on your other camera?
What's my other camera?
I don't know, I thought you had another camera.
Oh, my other camera?
Anybody's camera, other than, like, so you got... Wait, Joel, you just spent, like, $5,000 on cameras in the past
I
year.
I have not spent $5,000 on cameras.
What was the battery life?
$4,995.
All right, yeah. What else?
The Pocket Osmo is not horrible. It's not going to last as long as, say, my SLR. My SLR, if I'm just shooting primarily stills, well, that thing will last all day on one, easy. Although I have two spares, so I never, you know, I've never run out of battery life in a day of shooting. Now, it will, if I have the LCD on more, if I'm recording video more, then that will take the battery life and notch it down a little bit. But like I said, that's why I have two spares.
Well, you know, I have no idea what the battery life is, you just said, of recording video. Is it all day? Is it like...
Well, that I don't just record video with my SLR, so I mean, I really have no idea.
Like ballpark it. Like, what is your experience? Rich is getting out of his $20 camera an hour. Somebody was just saying the GoPro doesn't give him even an hour. Yep, so, like, give some ballparks here. Alan, do you have an idea?
With my GoPro, with the normal battery in it, I used to get probably about 2 hours of recording, depending on, because, you know, I never recorded it full. You know, I usually only did like 720.
Okay.
So it was a little bit less there. I had an extended battery pack, and that would give me about three and a half. The problem is there's no... Even though they said they sent you a back that would fit, the back never fit.
Yeah.
So that sort of like killed it, because I got it specifically for when I was on the motorcycle have the longer battery life. But because
are you talking about the case or?
Well, it's a larger battery. It actually sticks out the back.
Yeah, I got one of those.
So yeah, so they gave me a case for it, or a new back for the existing case, but it's just it doesn't work right.
Right.
I mean, you can sort of put it on there, but I'm damn sure that it's not waterproof at that point.
One of these days, I'd like to get a Hero 9, just because it's been a while since I had one. And I know the newer GoPros have stabilization built right in them. So, I mean, you can just throw it on a stick, and it's going to be... It won't be as good as, like, for example, our Osmo Pockets, but it will be pretty good. So I've seen some of the videos, and then I wouldn't really need to have... I have a Steadicam Curve for my Goat Hero 4, which I have used, and it actually does pretty well at stabilizing it, although you got to kind of walk funky because it's basically just using counterweights to help keep the camera straight.
I don't have too much problem with my Osmo Pocket. And I think my battery life on that is actually pretty good. I've walked around most of the day car shows between pictures and movies, and it's lasted me the whole day. I mean, if you're constantly record, then probably no, you're not gonna get
yep.
all day out of it. But
the thing I
didn't have any problem with it.
Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing too. With my Hero 4, whenever I have the Wi-Fi on, and I'm recording video on it, not like time lapses, but like video, like I the last couple times I did when we did the baptisms, I controlled the GoPro from the sanctuary instead of having to be up on the stage to hit the record button. All right, that way I could record a separate clip for each person getting baptized, and I used the GoPro because, you know, waterproof. The last couple times when I recorded video, the audio on it was completely unusable because it was only when the Wi-Fi was on. When the Wi-Fi was off, it was fine. So it basically has this buzzing noise when the Wi-Fi is on. So I'm hoping that one of these days I'm going to have to try picking up one of the newer GoPros to see if that fixes that problem, because this one's pretty old and it's not worth me sending it back to them, paying to have them fix it, because it's just not worth it at this point.
I've never had super bad audio from my GoPros. It's been muffled because most of the time it's in the waterproof case. But even, you know, I have one of those ones that's just like the frame that goes on the outside, and the audio is not bad. I've recorded my niece's show. I also record that onto an external.
Yeah, when the Wi-Fi is off, it's fine. If I have the Wi-Fi off, it's perfect. I mean, I have no complaints about it. I mean, is it as good as if I had an external microphone in it? No. But
I've never had any problem with the Wi-Fi. It eats the battery with the Wi-Fi on. I know that.
Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah. That might be why we have the different perspectives and how long it lasts, because I have the Wi-Fi on mine more often than not.
Well, normally mine, you know, Wi-Fi with mine is also the remote.
Right.
And that still also eats, you know, it eats batteries. But I'm on the motorcycle, I tend to turn it on and off, and it's easier than just reaching forward and turning it on.
And I have the LCD backpack on mine too. So
I don't have that.
Well, actually, I can put that on it. So, but most of the times I don't. You know, it's just one of those things I put on when certain situations. But one of these days, now I've been actually I like the concept of the little cube one they have, but I'm not sure I'd buy it.
You know, I have too many cameras now, so.
But yeah, I want to buy the microphone adapter for the Osmo Pocket, which I'll get a lot more mileage out of than any GoPro thing.
Yeah, that's a neat little thing there.
Yep, my biggest complaint with the GoPro, and it's only a minor quibble, is that the lens is so freaking wide, but that's because it's an action cam, so it's not.
Well, with the Osmo, with the
Pocket. Oh, the Osmo is fine. No, the Pocket's fine with that. I mean, it's the GoPro just has this really freaking wide lens.
Turn it down normal.
Well, it doesn't. Well,
you know, there's
medium
and normal at that point.
The only thing I can usually correct most of it in editing, so it's not that big of a deal. But it's just I would like it if there was like a dial or something where you can turn the wide down a little bit, you know. But that's just because I use the GoPro differently than a lot of people who use GoPros. So I got a like a little IKEA kitchen timer, and I stuck a GoPro mount on top of that, and that works great for like a motion time lapse.
Yeah.
So, not as flexible as, say, the Osmo. Actually, one thing I discovered, the Osmo Pocket only does 2 points. The mobile will do multiple points. So, like, you can have it go, like, from on one side, I can have it pointing down to pointing up, in the middle, and then pointing down on the left hand side, so it can go in like an arc, kind of, sort of. Mm-hmm. So it's more than 1 point, or 2 points, I should say, which the Osmo Pocket is just strictly 2 points.
I've actually never played with that yet. So.
Yep. I do like doing the motion lapses, and And that's kind of one of my favorite things, motion lapses and time lapses with it. One of these days I want to get the Wi-Fi adapter for the Osmo Pocket, which is, it's not expensive. It's like $40. So
it's not too bad.
No, it's a worthy accessory. The only, I'm trying to think, I think it has a tripod mount on the bottom of it. I'm not sure. The little 3D printed thing I have does actually work well with the tripod, but which once I get my ass to the post office to mail your stuff, you will have one too.
Okay. So I wasn't gonna say anything.
I know, but that's right now. I'm printing it's Christmas season, so I'm printing gifts. I'm printing little boxes to put the gift cards in for my family so I don't have to wrap them because I'm a lazy fucker. But then I made two ornaments for the two pastors at my church. And I did those with multiple colors to just two. I did one color change. And they came up pretty nice, but I must have bumped the y-axis a little bit. Because it's a tiny bit off, but it still works. Actually looks good.
As long as it works.
Yeah, it wasn't all the way off. And at least I didn't mess with the Z-axis. The Z-axis is probably the worst one when you're doing a color change, because if you bunk that, then it can crash into the print altogether and all that. But what I did them, if you've seen the... I'm trying to remember if I shared the one on MeWe, the one I made for the family. That's on our tree. I printed it in the first color was translucent. That's kind of what I did with these ones I made for the pastor. So they're translucent, and then red text on top of that. And when you put the translucent ornament in front of a Christmas light on a tree, it shines through, which is kind of nice.
Hmm. Neato.
So, and that's my 3D printing minute.
You need to have music to pull you in and out of that one.
Yeah.
Now here's Joel awesome. With the 3D printing minutes.
And this year I got two. My other one works. I just haven't used it in a while because it's so small. To two 3D printers. One of these days I want to upgrade or get another one. But what I need to do is I need to figure out where I would put it. There ain't enough room in here.
I wanted to buy the Prius Mini. Or however you pronounce it. The Prius Mini. Prius, whatever. Prius. A Mini that just came out. The one that just came out.
Actually, what I'd like to get, and actually that might be easier to fit in here than anything, is I want a resin printer.
Those do look interesting.
Yeah, because those ones you can go really tiny on compared to, you know, anything else I've got. And not just tiny, but tiny and high resolution. So it will actually look good when it's tiny.
Right, you just have to be careful what kind of light you let in the room.
Correct, yeah. And the only negative with the resin printers is you do have to have some IPA on, not Indian Pale Ale, isopropyl alcohol. To rinse the resin off.
That'd be a tasty ass printer.
Now that it's used to rinse the prints off prior to UV curing, and UV curing you can do it with sunlight, or you can also do it with I think those fingernail drying dryers. The little UV light ones. That's a good question.
Well, wait, is that
shouldn't take
is that
long.
Something you have to commonly do? It wouldn't take do? Long.
With the resin printer, yes.
Oh, the resin printer.
Yeah, resin printer. It kind of works in reverse of compared to the standard PLA / PETG FDM printers, in that instead of building up from the bottom on a platform, it actually, the platform will lower down into, basically builds the print upside down. So the print's hanging from a platform, and it lowers the platform in and
into suspended liquid.
Correct. And then it shoots either, and it can be either a laser or it can also be LED, I think, via like a DLP, kind of the same kind of deal that with the DLP TVs. And that when that light hits that layer, it cures the layer. So then it raises it up, lowers it down, raises it up, lowers it down, raises it up until you get your full print. And the other side to that too is you do have to have drain holes in it so that the resin can come out.
Right. I was going to mention that if you didn't do the print correctly, you'd end up with liquid in the middle.
Correct. A lot of the slicers, I don't think any of them use Cura. I think they usually use their own thing. Depends on who made the printer. I know Creality has one now. There's also the other one is, I'm trying to remember the other one. But they're right around the ones I'm talking about are actually right around, $350. Unlike the Form 2, which is going to run you about $2,000 or $3,000. The Form 2, it also has some different consumables. It basically has like a cartridge system for the resin, so you don't have to pour it into the tank. And it also has build platforms where you would, I think a build platform is only good for so many prints on the Form 2, so you have to actually replace it. Those are quite expensive, but that's why it's a $3,000 printer. Now the other ones, you basically have to pour it in. The other negative with resins is they can be odorific, kind of chemically smelling, I think. And you don't want to get the stuff on your hands either. So you want to have those gloves on hand when you're handling them and doing the post-processing on them. But when you pull them out, man, can you get some really decent prints.
Wait, did you say you got one of these or you're going
to? No, I'd like to get one.
So how long have they been out?
Oh, those ones have been out for quite a while.
Oh, they have been?
Yeah. They just haven't been very commercially available.
Or cheap.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, because I was just like, I was really curious, because I never saw how a resin 3D printer works.
And there's a couple of really good YouTube videos.
Yeah,
on
I saw a little video showing one, but they were talking about how expensive it is.
Yep.
And so I was just curious, because I was looking, I just did a quick search on them there, and, you know, they're coming in between like 150 to, or 165 is when I see Loa and on up. So I was just curious as to, you know, how long these been out on the market general for more consumers.
It's nowhere near as popular as FDM, because FDM is just dirt cheap to do. Resin is a little bit more expensive.
Is it a better print?
It's debatable.
Yes. Well, I would
higher
say
higher resolution
definitely.
Print.
It's higher resolution, so a lot of the striations you see in some 3D prints, you just don't get on a SLA printer. So, like the
are they as sturdy? Are they stronger? Are they less strong?
I would say more so. It would because most of the resin printers aren't necessarily kits where you're putting them together like FDM printers are.
Not the printers, they come out of the prints.
Oh, the prints. Yeah, they're very sturdy. Yeah, every one I've ever seen have been pretty sturdy on those.
Wouldn't it be pretty difficult to do things like supports?
It depends. Most of the software, like I know the ones I've seen on the Form 2 has its own software, and I'm not sure about the Creality one, but the Form 2 basically does the supports almost 100% for you, and the supports are actually quite a bit nicer than your standard ones, because basically all there is connecting into the model is a very small point, because it's instead of having to sit on it like it does on an FDM, it kind of hangs from it. So it doesn't build as much support.
I see what you're saying there. What about internal structural supports?
It depends on depends on what your infill is. I do believe you can do solid infills. So.
Cool.
Yeah, the Creality 3D LD001 is actually $700 right now. So, but you can get cheaper ones than that. And that doesn't include buying any containers or any kind of wash. Like, I know the Form 2 comes with a wash. Well, not doesn't come with one. An option is that you can get this washing system where basically it has one vessel of isopropyl alcohol, usually 90% or higher, then another one with water. So you rinse it with the alcohol first, then you rinse it with the water to get all the resin off. And then you have to cure it before you handle it. But you can look around. There's a lot of good videos on those, and a lot of good images of the prints, and they're just fantastic. I mean, you can do things with the SLAs that you just can't do with the other stuff.
So what it looks like, and just because I haven't, this is the first 10 minutes I've actually looked at any of this technology. But from doing the brief reading and how it works, you got the what it does is it's got the base that drops down into the resin, and then there's a light underneath on the base that solidifies the resin to the base, or to the, there's too many bases I'm talking
about. To the platform. Yes.
So then it operates kind of like the light is it just one light in there, and is it operating kind of like the way an Etch-a-Sketch works, where it has that a grid that you have a capability of doing a fairly fine motion, and are you limited by the size of the light that you could put in there for how thin you want to get it? Then is that one of the benefits of a resin printer, is you can do a far thinner print than you could with
If I remember right, one of the early versions of the ones that were affordable, actually, you put something like a cell phone, a light about the size of a cell phone down in the bottom, and you built everything around that, and that is what provided the light that hardened the resin.
Correct, and it could either be...
Was it that wide? How did you narrow the focus so that you didn't get, like...
Well, wherever the light came on the screen, that would be where it hardened. So you could do shapes. So your resolution was limited to the resolution of your screen.
Oh, mm-hmm. I thought you were talking about the flash on there.
No.
I get what you're talking about.
It's an LCD in front of a light. So basically the light will shine, and then it basically masks out the area wherever the dark places are will not be resin. That'll be empty space.
Okay, so, I see how it is.
Yeah, so DLP technology, just like the old DLP TVs.
I thought it actually had to have like a stronger beam of light that you would get from like a laser or whatever.
There are some that have lasers, and those are the really pricey ones. So, and we haven't even talked about sintering printers, because those are nowhere close to being afforded. Yeah. But sharks with freaking laser beams, yeah. No,
sorry about that.
No.
Couldn't resist.
But then there's also the sintering ones, which those ones are really expensive yet. The sintering ones can do even more, because basically the sintering ones, you don't really require any support, because it is essentially a powder, and it's very it's similar to the resin ones, but since it's your print is in a powder when it's printing it, the powder itself supports it, so you don't have supports in a sintering printer.
Now that 3D printer, what it does is, yes, laser beams or electricity, it actually melts the dust into the shape.
Yes,
so you put a small layer down, you melt it in the right areas, you put another layer down, you melt it in the areas, and you keep moving up.
The centric ones can be metal as well.
Yes.
So, which is even better.
I saw a video of them making a bike out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that suck up the dust that it hasn't used and reuse it again?
It actually can. Yeah, it actually can. Basically, any of the dust that you sweep off the printer can be reused, and it can only be reused like a certain amount of times, of course, because basically you are taking material out of that powder. So, but these are like, you know, these are where I would say start at least $10,000. So sintering printing is not cheap yet, but once it is.
And I'm not sure how good it is anyway.
Yeah, the Form Labs, who also makes the Form 2, which is the resin one of the resin ones that I know of, has the Fuse 1, and it starts at $9,000. Ain't cheap, baby. But it's really cool, though. You have 3D printing technology from 150 all the way up to millions of dollars.
That's chump change, man. You should get one for Christmas, Joel. You deserve it.
I think so, but no. And they're very much still not. I mean, they're not. They're prototyping machines. They're not great for making like little one-offs that you do use. Yeah, you can do that with them, you know, but just because of how long it takes, like I was printing two ornaments at a time when I made ornaments for my team meeting last week, and each round of printing I was printing two ornaments at a time, and it took 12 hours to do two ornaments. That's not economic. I mean, it's fine for what I was doing. I made 18 of them. But for somebody who wants to make thousands of them, it's just not economically feasible. So you 3D print it, and then you resin cast stuff. Either resin cast I think you can do, depending on what you use for the... With the resin casting with 3D printing, you basically take your 3D print and make a mold of some sort. So whatever your mold will stand up to, you could essentially cast it out of. But before you do the mold, you'd want to also do any kind of sanding, like you were going to paint it. So fill in any of the layer striations. You know, basically prep the thing like you were going to paint it, but then don't paint it. You would cast it. So. But on the SLA ones, though, I've seen videos and read stories where people have taken them and made their own wedding ring, where when they were 3D printing it, it actually put the engraving that you would normally engrave after the fact into the ring, and then they took the ring and they cast it out of pewter or titanium. I don't think they did titanium, but some metal of some sort, you know, so that they had their own custom wedding ring. Or wedding band, I should say, because it was a guy. But but that's why that stuff interests me. That and, like, for a... I think the SLA printers are really good for those who are into, like, like the gaming through miniatures, you know, like gnomes and stuff for well, not gnomes, but elves and whatnot for Dungeons and Dragons or whatever kind of
Warhammer
board game you have. Warhammer, yeah, that's another one. Dude, Warhammer is way more popular than I ever thought it was. Never played Warhammer.
Yeah, apparently it's so popular that I don't know anybody who has played it, or I've never played it myself.
Yes, you do.
Have you played... Who? Joe?
Fab.
I've met personally. where I've come in contact.
Okay.
So first off, it sounds like people who are into Warhammer are real. You know that's great.
Nine times out of ten, they're really into it.
Yeah. So if you're into Warhammer, you're probably really into Warhammer. It's been around a long time. Do you do it, Joe?
No, I had some friends, and when I was in the military, I had roommates that were extremely interested in Warhammer.
I personally, my board game wasn't necessarily the role-playing game, but BattleTech, I loved BattleTech, playing that.
See,
my problem is getting people to play it.
I have to think, man. 3D printer for like role playing games is phenomenal. It's got to be like,
oh yeah,
oh
yeah.
That's like a perfect right there, man.
A friend of mine, he plays X-Wing, and there's also another one. Isn't there an Imperial board game? I can't remember, but he has printed AT-ATs for his Star Wars board games. Beat Imperial bases for his board games, painted them, and he does a full layout when they have a night at his house to play X-Wing or some of the other games that he plays. He has everything. He's done not just the models, but also made boxes to keep the little tokens and stuff that you use during the gameplay and the cards and
so,
things like that.
Ballpark it for me, Joel. How much would it cost to print one of those pieces, would you say? Just a standard character piece.
If you've already got the printer, then...
On a resin, I don't know, but on a PLA, you're talking, I would say, less than 20 cents, probably, for one miniature.
Let's just say 20 cents plus... the electricity and everything to do it, probably what, $1?
Maybe.
$1. Yeah. Do you know, have you ever looked at the cost of those things?
Yep.
Like Marvel.
I used to buy.
Yeah, Marvel die-cast. Just put out a new game. I forget what it's called, but I was like, oh, it sounds really neat. But it's like little figures like that. They're just like resin cast figures, I think they are. It's like you get like. The starter set is like $90 or something and you get like 5 to 10 figures. And I'm like, holy crap!
Yep. Well, a lot of those are actually die-cast.
I don't think they're die-cast. I don't.
Oh, really?
I don't think. I thought that.
I think they'll look just as good in PLA.
Yeah, you know what? That's what yeah. I'm saying. You know, a couple of dollars to print those things out, and you can paint them yourself. Hands down, they're going to play just as well, if not better than the other ones. And you saved yourself a couple hundred dollars in the process.
Like I just did a search on Amazon, Ironwind BattleTech, which I assume is a branch of the BattleTech games. Project Phoenix Rifleman diecast is $17 for a little miniature. That one's probably. I don't know, inch and a half tall, probably. They're not huge. The only thing with trying to print those things with a PLA is the detail might not be quite as good, you know. The BattleTech beginner box is $19. That's for the board game, which probably has a mech sheets. Probably cardboard counters and that, and some dice, and a hex map or so. But it's neater when you can build like your own terrain and stuff from when you play these games. I would actually, if I were to do BattleTech, that's kind of what I would do. Is I would build a hex terrain, because the BattleTech system is a hex system, and. So then that way you can actually kind of visualize more what altitude and, you know, where they are out on the board, and bring a little bit more realism to the game in a game that's using fictional machines. That are miles away from existing now. Oh, actually, no. The BattleTech Beginner Box actually includes a couple diecasts in it, which is interesting.
When you say diecast, are you talking about
metal?
Some
just
kind
like
of
like,
metal, right? Yep. Yeah.
No, just these, like what your Hot Wheels are made out of.
So this is called Marvel Crisis Protocol. You get 10 figures. They're plastic, unpainted, right? And then you get some like other stuff like dumpsters, traffic lights, lampposts, and stuff like that. It's like $80 on Amazon for that, right?
Yeah.
Jesus.
That
and
is...
all it takes is a couple of cameras to and one set of them to start printing out your own.
But I'm sure that you could go online and get schematics.
There's
somebody else
models.
Has already done it. Yeah.
Who's done
or at least something really close.
Right. So, you know, and they didn't even have to be these exact things. I mean, all it is just the character. The rules are what you would use, but I mean, damn, that's expensive.
And you can get, and the other thing, kind of nice thing, is you can actually get them in other sizes, too, because, like, I have looked on, like, one of my favorite mechs in BattleTech was one called the Mad Cat, which was from, also called the Timberwolf, depending on where you were. If you were in the Inner Sphere, you called it the Mad Cat. If you were a clan, invading clan, then you called it a Timberwolf. And that one, God, that would have been hours of printing with the one model I saw, because basically it was printed to the legs, the torso, and the cockpit, and everything was kind of printed in multiple prints. And it essentially was a model is what it was. You'd print it, and then you'd sand it and paint it and all that stuff. And then you'd have something to collect dust on the shelf. Which is why I haven't printed one of them yet.
You know, you haven't printed what yet?
A BattleTech mech.
Oh. I was curious, have you ever thought about, like, printing out a model to put together, like, the old... I'm sure they have a ton of those on there, too, like the Rao Partha style, you know, car or plane or whatever it is, and just... put it together? Have you ever thought of doing that?
Yeah, one of the things I need to think about doing is, and what I would like to do is I would like to do one of the Enterprises from Star Trek.
No, there you go.
But no. I just haven't found a model that I like. The one I've tried printing, I actually did successfully print the top hull of the Enterprise A, but then when I do that, I'm thinking, well, why am I just printing? Because the models I was printing, basically, once they're put together, they didn't have any anything in the model that accounted for doing things like lighting. So if you wanted to put lights in it, so it would light up, it didn't really have anything in the model for that. And I really actually haven't found an Enterprise model that was like that. So and that's actually what I'd probably rather do at that point. There are models that are designed that way from the top up in the kit form. They're expensive though, like I think $50-$60 just for the model kit itself, not counting paints and all that other stuff. Plus, one of these days too, I'd like to get an airbrush before I get into that, because
yeah,
it's
just
a little easier to paint them.
Get the
rattle cans.
Blueprint for that thing, man. You can print that out yourself for $5.
It wouldn't look as good, and it would require a lot more sanding, but yeah.
Wait, when I said, like, print it out, though, I mean, like, you would print out just like it was the model in the little plastic thing that you have to pop the pieces out and then glue them back together. There you go. Yeah.
I wouldn't print them with the sprue, because the sprues always are, when you pop them out of the sprue, you always have a little piece you got to fill in or sand down.
Yeah, and then it would be a waste of plastic.
Yeah. I wouldn't print the sprue, but like a...
Hey, guys, I got to take off early a little bit tonight, so...
Merry Christmas!
Yeah, Merry Christmas,
sweetheart.
Man.
Happy New Year's, because I don't think we're going to talk till after the New Year's. So.
Probably not, unless you come on Hacker Public Radio New Year's Eve.
No, we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
All right, man. Anyway, have a good one. Thanks for listening.
See you.
Happy, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, carry on, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my concern. If I printed off like the Enterprise models, there would still be striations. Even in my best looking print, there would still be layer striations. I would definitely have to do quite a bit of filling in. So in some cases, I would rather go buy the model kit itself. But if I'm printing something like I'm just using for a token for a board game, I would actually spend the time to do that, because those can be expensive.
Yeah, I did. When my 3D printer was working forever ago, I did print off a Yoda head, and that, to get it to look good, that took a lot of work after the print with, like, pick tools, mm-hmm. and a little bit of sanding, and a knife.
And a little putty.
Yeah, it is a lot of work to get it looking really good.
And it's not as much work with the resin cast kit that you buy. I mean, you still have to do a little bit of that, but we're talking a little bit versus a lot. Like, if you've seen the ornament I printed last year, and I painted it was a snowflake with McLaughlin in gold. If you've seen that picture, I'll share it in a minute. But if you've seen that picture, that one probably, and it's a smaller piece, so there wasn't as much with it, but I did have to do quite a bit of filling on that one, especially since it came off my older printer. The newer printer has a lot better quality than my older one, mostly because it's got the heated build platform, where my old printer, my little printer doesn't have that. But but there was a lot of work to make it look that good and that smooth. So I would say, not counting drying time for the putty, I would say about an hour of sanding and painting. So, I mean, it wasn't that bad, but then I was only doing one ornament, So, I mean, there are things, one thing that, I'm in the Creality group, and one guy they were doing a remodel of their bathroom, and they had a cast iron, I believe it was a vent pipe, in their house. And it broke. All right, and it was the vent pipe that goes all the way to the roof of your house. Big, heavy cast iron thing. So he thought about just replacing it, which is really the right thing to do, because we're talking about plumbing and we're talking about your house. And yeah, it's a vent pipe. There's not much chance of water coming out of it, but still, I don't think you'll want to use a 3D printed part to do that. besides not being up to building code. But he was like, oh, well, should I 3D print this and repair it that way? I'm like, call a plumber. It's your house. It's not like that. One of the most functional prints I made, Dan, was, those stupid little plastic things that are on the floor, screwed into the floor for your closet doors.
I figured you were going to say your K-cup holder.
Well, that was good, too. Yeah. But I need to look and see. Actually, you know what? I don't need to look and see. It's a Holiday Inn Express. I need to pack Keurig K-Cups because they have a Keurig in the room.
What plastic thing are you talking about on the floor? Where it, like, clips into the door when you start to close it?
Yeah.
Okay, I know what you're talking
about. The guides that usually break that are on the floor.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I printed two of them, one for my room and one for Luke's room, and they are more solid than the replacement part I would have went and bought at Lowe's.
No, that's great.
They have not broke yet. I say yet. I'm expecting them to, but if they do, hey, no problem. I got the model 3D printed again, and I had unscrew the old one, screw the new one in, and it's fixed again. But ever since I put that in, my son's doors haven't fallen off the track.
Well, that's good.
So... and I think it also helps because his problem was is he would have too much shit in his closet, so it would push those doors out and then they'd pop off the track, but now that I got the floor guy back in right place, that doesn't happen, so it can actually, stuff can rest against the door and the doors are going to stay where they're at, And that's what they're supposed to do. But those cheap ones, the ones you buy at Lowe's or Home Depot, those things break, man. Every single I've never not had one house or apartment that have had those doors in them where those stupid guides on the floor haven't broke. So that's what I like. Or like I actually designed and printed some risers for, like, I went and bought like one of those pre-made shelves, you know, just the appliance essentially, right? And I designed it and printed it, and I use that to prop my monitor up. On I have an external monitor I have hooked to my work laptop, so I have my monitor sitting on top of that, so that lets me use the space underneath the monitor to store crap. You know, that's useful. In fact, I'd actually like to design another one that either clips on top of it, so I can put another level on it, so I can make like stackable shelves. Goofy stuff like that. Functional stuff, not desk collectors like Raoul Parthen models for board games that I play once or twice a year. I do need to play more board games, though, because I remember how fun those were. I just need to go to one of the things. That actually brings up one thing that kind of disappoints me here in Columbus. We had a local mom and pop, well, mostly just a mom, store called, it was called Starbase Columbus. And several years ago, the lady who owned it, BJ Matias was her name. She's also been to many of these different sci-fi conventions, Star Trek conventions. You know, she's getting up in age, and she decided she wanted to retire. So they actually sold it to the local chapter of IFT, or International Federation of Trekkers. And they actually ran it quite a while. They moved it from the Westerville location down to Eastland Mall, which is a very depressing mall now. But unfortunately, I went in that mall looking for something for Luke for Christmas, which was a stupid idea because there ain't nothing in there. And I noticed they were gone, and I'm like, oh, wonder what happened to them. I Googled in it, and it looks like they shut the physical store down and went completely online via an Amazon store, which is kind of sad. But what was neat about this store was it wasn't just Star Trek, but it was primarily Star Trek. So they had collectibles and stuff there that, quite frankly, are easier to find on Amazon right now. Either via their store or somebody else's store. So that's kind of what did them in. But what they were trying to do, though, was actually pretty honorable. They were kind of, any kind of profits they made off of selling stuff, they were donating to different things like a disaster. Like, I think they did some stuff with one of the hurricanes several years ago. There's, like I said, they're still around, but it's just an Amazon store now. It's kind of sad, though, because that was one of the neatest stores to go into. Because you go in there, like, back in the 90s, I used to go in there and during the heyday of Star Trek, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. And you can go in there and get, like, resin cast models of starships that weren't the main character starships. So, like, you can get a Miranda class from The Wrath of Khan. Or you can get various Klingon models, and a lot of stuff that you wouldn't find in your normal store in that kind of section. So, but unfortunately, there are no more, just online. And now I'm finding that with a lot of specialty shops, like a lot of the gaming shops that were like that. We had one called the Watch, called the Watchtower, but I don't think it was called the Guard Tower. I think is what it was called in Columbus, and I think they're gone too. And a lot of those places, they'd have rooms where you can go and game. So So if you didn't have any friends that did it, you can just go there and get a pickup game.
Yeah, that's what our local comic shops are for.
Yep, and them too, yep.
That and...
hobby shops too.
Yeah, and pub, not pubs, but like brew pubs, breweries. Big gaming right. Going on scene in breweries and coffee shops really? Too, I've seen. Yes, huh. Absolutely.
Interesting.
Like there's a brewery in Norfolk. I can't remember what they're called. Just give them free publicity. But they actually have, you know, they have board games and game nights there, but they actually sell games in a partnership with a comic book store in that area, too.
Interesting.
Because booze and shopping leads to the best decisions.
I could see it causing many a geek to buy thousands of dollars worth of gaming stuff. That stuff ain't cheap, man. Those resource books were $20, $30 a piece back in the day.
You see what they are now. They're like $50.
Oh, yeah. The one game I always wanted to play was the Star Wars role-playing game, which there was one by West End Games. There was that and... they had a game called Star Warriors, which is Starfighter Combat, I had both, and I actually managed to get my brother to play it with me once on that game, which was if you're not a geek, not into numbers and stuff, those games aren't for you. I'm sorry, they're just not. You know, because you're like you rolled your crit or something. And he's like, "What's a crit?" He just didn't understand it. But...
We're getting close, blah. Man. We're getting close, but to
Star Wars, to
Quentin time. Well, yeah, Star Wars too, but
Rise of Skywalker. I'm going Friday. Whether I want to, well, I just decided I'm just gonna go. I'm not super enthused about seeing it, but I'm just gonna go and get it out of the way.
I'll probably see it sometime next week when I'm off, or the week after.
I mean, it's no secret Palpatine's back. I'm still not sure how, but that's been everywhere, and I don't think that's a spoiler necessarily. But
well, in the books, it was a clone.
Yeah, from my understanding and what I've read of the reviews, this semi those ones, a lot of reviews mentioned it. I don't think it's a spoiler. I think we knew that was going to come. Especially ever since the first teaser trailer where it ended with him laughing, unmistakable, you know, but, the reviews that I have read, most of them said they didn't explain it in the movie. So it's like, I'm like, would have been an interesting point, you know, cause some theorized, and this is before it even came out. Some theorized that if he was still alive, that maybe he escaped out of vent in that pit that he was thrown in Return of the Jedi. Some of, like, the Clone Wars, you know, like he was a clone, you know? So, you know, multiple clones. If you remember in the speech he had in Revenge of the Sith, he talked about... Darth Plagueis cheating death. But yeah, it would be interesting.
If he escaped, he would be extremely old.
Yeah. I'm thinking more like it whatever he had to do with the Force to make that happen just took time or something. I don't know, but... You know, and I love it. Like, even Disney is saying, it's the end of the Skywalker saga. I'm like, it really isn't. Nothing ever has an end in this world. Otherwise, they wouldn't be making another Ghostbusters movie. Did you see the trailer for that, Dan?
No, I haven't been paying attention to anything.
That looks fantastic.
It does look good. But in the trailer that I saw, I don't know if there's a different one or not, I didn't see any of the original characters other than in, you know, flashbacks.
Yeah, that they haven't. From my all intents, though, I've heard all the living ones are going to appear in it at some point.
Like they did in the other one?
I don't think it's going to be like they did. I think they're actually going to be the characters that they played. I mean, obviously Egon can't come back because Harold Ramis is gone. But Bill Murray or Dan Aykroyd or who played Winston? I can't remember.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Didn't he die?
Egon died. Harold Ramis is the guy who played Egon.
No. Who's the guy who we're not remembering?
Well, it's Winston Zeddemore.
Ernie Hudson.
Yeah. He's still living.
Well, yeah, I guess he is. I thought I heard he died also for some reason. I'm what? No, not that guy. No, okay. So, yeah, I know.
But what is he in other than Ghostbusters? I only remember him as Ghostbusters, but...
He was in a lot of films. Ghostbusters 2?
Yep.
He was in The Crow. The Family Business. Let's see, what... She's still.
I think he's just like one of those character actors that if you actually see him, you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. He was in something else. I remember.
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver, Annie Potts, Ernie
Congo.
Hudson.
He was in
Everybody's
Congo.
In there. He was in Congo. Oh.
Wait, I gotta go way back because I remember he's done a shit ton of stuff. So I gotta go. And I'm still like, I'm scrolling down and down and down, and I'm like, wait, we're still in the 2000s. This is like back in the 80s when he did, he was on a TV show, wasn't he?
I think so.
I mean, he's appeared in a lot of different TV shows from different strokes to, Bosom Buddies and Taxi, Dukes of Hazzard.
Now, I'm trying to think, when's the Orville coming back? I know it's not coming back to Fox, but the Orville is supposed to come back soon, too, if I remember right. It's going to be Hulu only for the Orville. That's what I was going to try and print, was the Orville from that TV show. I don't know. Most of the models I've seen didn't look too good once I got them in Kura. Because good luck finding a model of the Orville. You see, I can find models of the Enterprise D, but of the Orville? Nah.
Man, Ernie Hudson was too many things.
And then I read another rumor where they're going to be making another Last Starfighter movie.
Do they need to? I think that movie was good on and of itself.
A remake? Yeah. You don't
it wasn't going to be a remake. It was going to be a sequel. Not a remake. It was a sequel.
A sequel of what? You destroyed the bad guy at the end. Ooh.
Well, he had to rebuild the Star League, though. Because the Kodan weren't gonna be hobbled forever.
No, I guess. Is it gonna have the same cast?
Well, obviously not, because what's his face died. Well, I think Lance Guest is still around, but the guy who played Centauri is gone. He died not long after that movie.
Well,
if I remember right.
I mean, I guess I could see that he was kind of old to begin with, but. It was, who
Who is it? Catherine's Mary Stewart played Maggie. That was his girlfriend.
Yeah,
wasn't
it was.
It?
Yeah, it was his girlfriend.
So,
are they getting Rick Moranis for the new Ghostbusters movie?
He's retired. He's not. He's pretty much actually. If I remember the story I heard right, I think his wife passed from cancer or something, and he's been raising his kids. That's what I think happened.
Yeah, but his kids should be getting older now.
You would think. Dan O'Hurley, he was great. He's gone. And Robert Preston was Centauri. I think he's also gone. And I know most of the Codan were gone, but that does those don't matter. They're the bad guys. Oh, crap. Will Wheaton was in the last Starfighter? He was Lewis's friend. And Mark, I don't know how you say his name, Alimo.
Was he his kid brother?
This is Lewis's friend. His kid, his brother was Lewis, was the character name, but who was he played by? I'm looking at the list right now. Somebody that we probably know.
Wait, who are you talking about? The kid?
Alex's brother, Alex Rogan's brother.
Was that?
In the last Starfighter. Lewis Rogan was played by Chris Hebert. Which, down that doesn't sound as familiar. He looks familiar, though. But
wait, who did you said someone before that? Someone.
Mark Alimo, who was a hitchhiker. In the last Starfighter, he also was with Gul Dukat.
You mentioned Deep Space a big Nine. Name a few minutes ago that was in last Starfighter. Who was that?
Robert Preston.
Will Wheaton? No. It was Will Wheaton was in that.
Yeah, Will Wheaton. Yeah, he was apparently Alex's kid brother. He was his friend in the movie.
Well, was he?
It must have been uncredited. I don't know. I don't remember. It's not like I was paying attention to the stuff and going in the background.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, he is there. Will Wheaton, Louis' friend. Yeah. Oh, good for him, I guess.
Well, he was in a lot of stuff back then.
Yeah. So
Stand By Me, Star Trek The Next Generation. Right.
Well, I mean, yeah. So I guess they could still get Lance Guest is still alive, and so Catherine Mary Stewart is still alive. Yep. So there we go.
Yeah, and apparently Gary Whitta, who was on the Tested podcast before, and I also had a hand writing Rogue One, is writing the script for it. So if you liked Rogue One, then this should be pretty good, I think. Which I did like Rogue One. I wouldn't say it was the best Star Wars movie I ever saw, mostly because I already know what was going to happen. But I'm still trying to figure out who the Bothans were. he said many Bothans died to bring us these plans. In Return of the Jedi. Oh, wait. All right. Okay, actually, the Bothans weren't involved in that. That was the first Death Star, so never mind. But so, yeah, I'm going like 10:45 on Friday night. Just me. I can't get my wife or my son to go with me to a movie. Part of it with Luke is just his sensory issues that he still has to this day with certain things. Like when he's bowling, there was a loudmouth bowler. He's probably drunk in his league Monday, and it really bothered him, so his game suffered. So anyway.
Yeah, it's almost that time.
Yeah, well, you know what? I wanted to give a little update on my project of last week.
All right.
Boy, what a freaking pain it has been. It's just, for some reason, I just can't get my head around JavaScript and Node. It just bothers me. I feel like I could do a hell of a lot faster in Python or even Bash, but...
Or anything you know.
Yeah, I'm getting better at it, but it's just a lot of like, oh, I got to be careful about synchronicity and promises and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, it's been a fairly complicated thing because getting the randomized data is not that difficult because I talked about the Faker library. And that's been a godsend. And although I have seen some issues with it, particularly doing like random name generation, although you know what, I shouldn't really. Well, it's kind of what I found kind of odd is, so I had to fill in.
So are like, you
what?
Are you generating like test data?
Yes, but it's relational test data.
Okay.
So like I had to, so there's a contributors table, which is like users table, and it's like first name, last name, and then the username was last name and first initial last name, which is like, all right, whatever, you know, but they were then switching to using a different type of ID system, but they still was using as part of this. So when I was using Faker to generate a first name and a last name, I got an awful lot of hits as duplicate usernames from that. So that kind of concerned me a little bit, that even though I was generating like just 100 names at a time, different names, there was still not that much uniqueness of last name, first initial. Just nitpicky things. I found ways around it, and they did say in the library that, you know, stuff like that, you should do some kind of checking if you need uniqueness to verify, you know, so if it's not unique, throw it out and do it again, you know, that kind of thing. But you'd have to build that in yourself. But it's been like really have to get down the nitty-gritty of how they created this. So it's essentially like there's this tool that they're using, and they set the database up over here, and really not much of an explanation, and I have to go back in and discover why they were doing certain things. So, you know, you had we want to make it relational in that, you know, so the user ID and how tables all join together need to be respected, you know. So like there is a list, and a list is created by a user, so there's a relationship there. And then lists have there's two type of lists, so it was one or the other. And then lists have plans, and plans could be associated with one or more lists. And then plans have tasks, and it can have one or more tasks. It could be in a archive state, delete state. So there's a lot of complexity that has to go in here to generate like actual relational data and preserve those relationships, and to be able to do that in a randomized way. I finally got it all put together, and that it's doing half of it right now. But it's been a challenge having to do that kind of stuff, to kind of randomize. How many, you know, here's user, well, how many lists are being created, and yep, randomly picking a user to create that, and then making sure that the site that they're part of is listed in there, and then, you know, randomly deciding whether or not you're going to have a list with a plan.
It's the reason why, yeah, I don't have test data. Our test data that we currently have in my company for my product, less was issued back in 2011.
Oh. Well, see, the thing about this is, though, which like you really like go, oh shit! Like once you get it all figured out and how you want to do it and stuff, you press a button and boom, you have like you're loaded in the database, mm-hmm, with a thousand relational
one would hope
entries that it's just like data. And I did that today and then press another button, you know, run another script and wipes it all out and then recreate it with random data again, wipe it all out. So
interesting.
It's a pain in the butt, but it
guess
really
what I got to do today. Yeah, yesterday I get informed that, oh, we're going to put you on the DR test team when we're doing our DR test Friday. I'm like, holy fuck.
disaster like, okay. Recovery, huh?
Yeah, we did a practice run today. Unfortunately, they had an environment, okay, which like one of our test environments with some test data. And really my job was to both to do a basically populate a couple records prior to the fall over, and then after that was done, run reports before and after. So that's what I had to do, as well as fix a shit, because the instance they gave me couldn't log into UI. All right, and I'm like, what the hell? Oh, your cert expired in January, folks. So nothing worked. So it took me a good 20-30 minutes to fix that before I can actually get to the point where I could run the pretests. And then they did do the fallover. It wasn't complete by the time that our meeting ended. It was like a two-hour meeting. And they were not just doing our ERP, but they were also doing our other product Banner at the same time. And it takes a while. We're basically falling over from the Amazon's Virginia center to Oregon, and they use Cloud Endurance to do the backups and to basically handle a lot of that for them. Cloud Endurance, by the way, was a independent product that Amazon did buy, so Amazon owns Cloud Endurance now. I don't have to do any of that. That's platform team. but I was doing the validation and all that. Now Friday afternoon we'll do that, basically we'll go all the way through the end and document everything, how long it took us and stuff like that. And it's mostly just so that we can verify that if it actually happens to a real customer instance in our cloud, that we can the kind of situation we were testing was like, say, the Virginia center went down. We had to fall over to the Oregon center to get our clients up. So whenever this happens, it would probably happen to multiple clients all at the same time. It wasn't too bad. It was really interesting. I was sitting there watching the fall over as it happened before I can actually get into the systems. And I switched the AWS console from Virginia to Oregon. And as I refreshed it, I could see the servers pop into the VPC. It was pretty cool just to witness it. I didn't get to do any of the actual hard work, but it was interesting to participate in. So, but nothing like being told, 2 days before, oh, you're going to be in the handling the assurance side of the validation. I'm like, holy crap! I'm like, okay, never done this before. Actually, none of our team has done it before. I'm the first one. because the guy who did it last year isn't on our team anymore. So, but it's pretty cool though. It's pretty neat. I need to get that Amazon training finished, though. Get the certification for that. Well, you guys are on Google, though, right?
Google for what? Oh, Google. We're in a... Well, the team and stuff that I do work is primarily in Google. There was some AWS that we moved out of there. There's still some on-prem stuff, but there's been a large move to Google in our, but there's also AWS. There might even be some Azure too. I don't know if there was some stuff being tested out in that, but I wasn't part of any of that. So I don't know if it's still there.
I've worked, not
all right, guys.
Go ahead,
I'll talk
Joe.
To you later.
No, I
I'm going to get off.
See you,
Joe. We're going to be closing up in just a minute anyway.
Yep. I've worked with instances running in Azure, but never actually handled any of the cloud side tools of that, you know. So other than just remote desktoping into instances, I have no clue about Azure, but I did have to. It's funny. I don't know why our it's either network or platform that I think it's network that requests the certs for both our clients and for us. We usually have them sign over a specific domain, like it's ec.clientname.edu or something like that. We say sign that domain over to us. That way we'll handle all the cert renewals and all that stuff. You don't have to worry about it. All right. So when they get them, rather than get them in a PFX, a nice, you know, easily digestible PFX, they get the individual parts. They get the key, they get the cert, and of course you get the intermediates and all that. So I had to use OpenSSL to combine those into a PFX file so that I can install it in IIS. So, which wasn't too bad. It's just knowing the command, that's all. Well, and downloading OpenSSL, which wasn't on the server I was using, but... but we have to do that for our clients too. So I actually got to test our documentation we had on that. So it was good. So makes me happy. But all that, and then I was in Orlando last week, which was fun. They took us, the boss Thursday night took us to Texas Day Brazil. Have you ever been there, Dan?
In what? Texas Brazil?
Texas Day Brazil is the name of a restaurant. I think it's Brazilian barbecue is what it is, I think.
I've been to Brazilian barbecue, but I don't know if I've been to that one specifically.
Yeah, it's basically the way they work is it's all you can eat. And you have a little circle, okay? One side of it's red, the other side of it's green. If it's green, they keep asking you if you want more meat.
There you go.
So, and they had a salad. The salad bar was really good. I'd never been to a salad bar that was this varied in things it had. Like, it had potato salad and which I guess that's not that varied. But, I mean, the just different things on it than you would normally see, not just the standard salad bar fixings. So, but we got that, and then while we were waiting for meat, probably my favorite was they had a garlic sirloin that was really good. And the way they brought it to you, they brought the meat to you on swords, man. And they sliced the piece of meat. And you had a little pair of tongs. You grab the meat and throw that on your plate. And oh man, it was so good. I need to take the wife up there. I guess there's one. That's one of the restaurants that at one of the OLS we almost went to instead of going to the Mongolian barbecue 1 year, but we went back to Mongolian barbecue because, hey, Mongolian barbecue is the bomb. And I haven't been to that in a couple years either.
Yeah, it is. We got to start wrapping this up.
Yes, we do. So for our listeners that are still listening, we probably will not have a show for the next 2 weeks.
2 weeks? Yeah, probably not. Like, so next week, people are going to be doing family stuff. And then the following week is, what is today? So it's going to be New Year's Eve next week, right? No. It's going to be the first.
No, it's Christmas Day next week, and it'll be New Year's Day.
Yeah, so New Year's Day, Hacker Public Radio, and recover from New Year's Eve.
Yep, if you drink.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know, like, don't know if I plan on being on Hacker Public Radio. I will be home by then. I'm leaving. Was supposed to leave Monday, but we're leaving Christmas Eve instead. And we're checking in the hotel Christmas Eve, and then we'll go over to Dad's on Christmas Day. Cool. And eat and all that. And Baked sugar cookies already. I need to bake ginger. I'm gonna bake gingerbread cookies. Colonial Williamsburg gingerbread cookies. So I'm gonna use that recipe, and I'm gonna make the. I haven't actually. The recipe wasn't on the back of the bag. It was a different recipe, but I got the peppermint Hershey Kisses, and I'm gonna make the. They have a kiss cookie, similar to the peanut butter ones, but with the peppermint kisses in the middle. And no peanut butter in the dough. So I'll make those. I think they call them peppermint kiss cookies. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I want to make those too, and we'll take those down. I'm making a shoe fly pie, man. I'm going to make that too this weekend.
Oh, shoot, man. I didn't tell you. I made a shoe fly pie.
Did you? Did it come out good?
Not this past, the weekend before. Not this past weekend. But yeah, it turned out really good. Everybody loved it.
Yummy.
It was the first one I ever made. So it was
brings back memories, don't it, Dan?
I was like, I remember when I was a little kid and I hated this.
You're probably right.
Yeah, I was like, I remember I didn't like it. And I was like, man, it was
but it's different. I mean, if you like molasses, actually gingerbread cookies. If you like gingerbread cookies, you should like a shoe fly pie because there's basically everything that's in a gingerbread cookie is almost in that pie. Almost. I mean, there's certain things that aren't, you know, there's no flour in the main part of the pie, of course, unless you count the crumb on the top, but, you know. And there's no, I noticed the recipe didn't have any eggs in it either.
Hmm.
But, at least the one I found, but, yeah, there's the, you know, Pennsylvania Dutch food, you know. Stuff you never, you know. You don't find outside of Pennsylvania, pretty much. But
right. I gotta send this off, Joel. You have a Merry Christmas, sir.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Happy
New Year.
Happy New Year.
Be safe. Have fun with family. Don't, you know, don't expect. If you want to listen to us, save this show for next week. if you really want to listen to us. But,
I don't think that's going to be a problem. There's plenty of other things to listen to. Enjoy your
Absolutely.
Time.
Go watch some Christmas Vacation where the shitter's full and the dog destroys the whole living room.
There you go. All right, man. So, here we go. Here are your promos. We'll talk to you in two. Have a happy in 2020.
Yep. Happy New Year.
There we go.
Oh, boom. My God.
It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduk to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
When's Ghostbusters Afterlife come out anyway? Oh, July. That's what I'll go see instead of seeing a Marvel film, probably.
Well, Black Widow looks really good.
It does, actually.
And but I Ghostbusters is gonna be. I like Ghostbusters too, so.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna stop the record and say goodnight, Joe.
Goodnight. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
What, 6 episodes?
I don't know. I have seen 4 episodes. Is it only 6 episodes this season? I know they're contracted for like 70.
I thought this was like a short season, but I could be wrong.
I have no idea.
That is really short from 70 down to 6.
No, they're contracted for 70 episodes total.
I thought you meant for the season. I was going to say, damn, that's a nice season there for them.
I was going to say that's like a whole year, twice a week.
That's a good point.
Which I'd have no problem with. I sort of like that program, but I don't watch it regularly. Because I don't stay up late enough to watch Adult Swim. I find it, so I have to catch it whenever it's on repeat.
That's what DVR is for.
I know, but I don't have anything that has a DVR on it. Oh, man.
That's what the internet is for.
Well, that's true, too, but I haven't found the episode yet.
That's what Shows RSS is for.
Shows RSS, okay. Helps you keep track of your favorite TV shows. I had not known about that site.
That's what transmission GUI RSS is for.
Look at that one now too.
Hey guys, I'm gonna duck out like just before 9 o'clock to do mini PC. We're gonna do a short one, and then I'm gonna be coming back. So just wanted to.
So are you warning us or threatening us?
Yeah, Both, how do you want to take it, dude? I'll bring it. I will bring it.
Da, 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 da.
I don't know, I can, give you like a 10-second review of that action camera that I got. Probably 4 or 5 minutes, but...
The $20 action cam?
Yep.
The 4K action cam?
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Well, you had to know there was something wrong with it at frickin' $20. I picked up a new device.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, boy.
But you're just gonna go, when I start talking about it.
Who's going to do that? Me?
Probably another, Joel.
Yeah. Another broken headphone?
No.
Oh.
Hey, if you picked up another broken headphone and started talking about how you're fixing them, now that.
Well, I do. I do talk about how I fix them. I could talk about the, what was the model I picked up? Oh, the LG HPS. It's something in the 500 series, the 510s. So they're a little bit older. But I did fix those as well.
Well, let me ask you this question.
are there videos out there that show how to fix these things?
Yeah, I think there are. I don't know.
Why don't you do a video?
Yeah,
you should.
Yeah. Well, I got one pair left to fix, and I was debating on whether or not to do a video on that.
Well, you know what? You pretend to fix one that you already fixed, and then you show how it works again.
Yeah.
There you go. You show the success. You already know you're going to have success.
This one should be a fairly simple fix. All I got to do is shorten up the cables a little bit.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Hello again.
Hello.
Right. Alan, stop coming in and out. You're messing my recording up.
I'm sorry. I kicked myself out by accident here.
Oops.
Yeah, I turned off VPN and I forgot that I was connected.
I think after the show, I'm going to mix up gingerbread dough.
Gingerbread dough?
No. See, the reason Joel's going to go, is because I picked up another tablet.
No, I wouldn't do that.
What tablet?
Well, I was trying to order a broken 7130, but they accidentally sent me a 7140 instead of the 7130. So I'm kind of doing a comparison right now between the two.
Hmm. All right.
But what's really great is how much I paid for it versus how much it's actually worth.
Okay, I'll wait. How much? Well,
I paid $40 for it. I paid $40 for it, and it's actually the 8 gigabyte model, which means that the average low-end sale price for them is about $135.
Okay, well, that's a good deal.
And other than it not having the M.2 drive in it, or the mSATA drive in it, I'm not sure, the NGFF SSD drive in it, which I had spares sitting around, it works perfectly. The battery holds a good charge. Screen is perfect. Even the back panel, which is always like one of the first things to break, is in perfect condition.
Cool.
And it works with all the peripherals that I have for the 7130.